1950 to 1922. Those are the two big strikes in New York of the Dressmakers Union.
You were there in 1922, right?
Yes. I was there for 1922.
And that was also, was that about the time of the fight between the left and the right?
Yes. That was a terrible fight between the left and the right. At that time, the left took over our international. And when Zygmunt came into the office in 1924, when he became president, he found an empty treasury because they took all the money out, whatever there was, and it went to the communists. And I had a few very good friends who were, happened to be communists, you know. And I went once to the meeting where they called the strike of Local 1922. And at that time I was already working in a 91 local shop on children's dresses. 1922 called the strike, and I went there with this friend of mine named Sophie. And they had a packed hall in the Beethoven Hall. It was packed. And the Charles Zimmerman at that time was became a Lofstonite, and it really the Lofstonites were the ones who led that strike. But when I came there, you know, I saw what was going on, and they sent out a man to find out how they're going to vote for the strike and against the strike. And I told the office that I was crazy. I said, all right, wait till this man comes in. Who do you think the man was? He was selling papers on the corner. Not to attract attention, but if they send out a dressmaker or something like that. So they sent him out. I don't remember his name, but I remember what he looks like. A tall fellow. And he was sent out. And I saw him go out. I said, Sophie, he's going out to find out what the vote should be. And Charles Zimmerman at that time was at the podium. He spoke. And she said, you're crazy. I said, I'm not crazy. You wait and see what will happen. Well, about 10 minutes passed by, and he came back, and as soon as he came back, the vote was taken, and of course it was a for a strike, and they all went out on strike.
Now, is this the strike when you were in the children's
1922,
shop?
And I worked in a children's shop.
And it was
so I thought I was going to avoid the strike, because I had enough of it. I went to New York because I wanted a vacation.
Yeah.
And, when 91 also went on strike, so I came there. I came into, I belong to Local 22, by the way, because I transferred from the Local 100, Chicago, to 22, to New York, to Dressmakers. And one of the vice presidents who used to come to Chicago occasionally, you know, Halperin, he was from Local 9, he saw me sitting there, and I didn't even go up to the union because I didn't want them to know I was in New York. But anyway, he spied me and called me over. He said, now listen, you're not going to get away with it. We're having a strike and you're going to be a part of it. So naturally, Greenberg was at that time the manager of Local 91. He wouldn't let me go, so I got into the strike of the children's dresses.
What happened in between... Brooklyn,
was that?
You said your sympathies were mainly with the IWW, but you were against
it.
But when the split happened, were you?
I was with the International.
How come?
Because I wouldn't be with the communists. Because it was the communists who split the International.
Did your sympathies still go with the IWW?
Philosophically, yes. But I was always a member and always an active member in the IWW, in the International, the Ladies' Carnage Workers Union. Ever since I joined them, when I joined them, I was 14 years old, but you wouldn't take me in. But I forced them to, I went to the joint board, and I worked in a dressmaker shop, and I forced them to take me in. So they took me in, I was only 14.
Were you working during the Herzog strike? 1915, the garment?
No, I was in school.
What are you
asking? 1915, I left Chicago for Madison, Wisconsin.
I know, but this was in the summer, and I wasn't sure if you were still there.
No, I was not.
Okay.
I went to Madison, Wisconsin early in the summer because I wanted to get a place to stay.
Oh, that was horrible, sorry.
And the strike was in Chicago, I was in Madison.
What about the general strike in 1917 in Chicago?
I was in the strike in 1917.
Could you tell me about that?
It's kind of hazy. But I was in the strike, and there were quite a few of the people that I knew, like Jenny Matthews, for instance, who was in San Francisco. I never really came across her name. She is still living there, but she's not with the union anymore.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of the strikers, and I was just a young girl. I was in the strike, that's all.
I mean, what the issues were in the long strike, things like that?
Most of the issues at that time were wages and security of the job.
Was it?
That was before the date expired.
Uh-huh. Was it for a preferential job or a closed?
Preferential. You know that we never had a closed shop. The ILGW never has, even today. We have no closed shops. Because they figured out that it's easier for us. I'll tell you why. Because, the turnover of workers is very big. Mm-hmm. Women get married, girls get married. And being that new people come in, we can organize them. Otherwise, if it's a closed shop, they cannot take them in until they join the union. But if it's a preferential shop, they hire them non-union, and then we can organize them. And we always felt that it was much better for the union to have a preferential shop. So we have a preferential shop to this day.
I didn't come across a closed shop.
We never had a closed shop.
When you were organizing, when you organized a shop that you went into where there was no union, could you describe what steps you took
and
exactly what you did?
Well, that's later. Now it's more mature already.
This is about 19.
Well, I'd say 1916, when I came the summer, when I came home.
Right.
I organized the first shop. I told you how.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I organized it through the boss. I talked to him, and he said that if I teach him how to make a check, he will do anything I want to. So I began to talk to the girls that we could organize a shop if they would want to. And what will you get by it? I said, well, you get an increase in wages, and you'll have the security of your job. They won't be able to fire you. So they agreed. I had 100% agreement in that shop. It wasn't a big shop. It was about 16 machines, I'd say. And so altogether, I imagine there were about 16 machines, two presses is 18, two cars is 20, about four finishers is 24. Actually, about 24, 25 people.
What about shops where the boss wasn't quite that ready?
Then we had to call strike.
So would you talk, I mean, how did you?
How did I do when that shop was that way? I talked to the girls.
Mm-hmm.
Became friends with them. Now, I'll give you an example of one shop so you'll know how these things are. I talked to the girls, for instance, about a union, if I was a union girl, and I found that in that shop there was another girl that used to work in a union shop, and she was a union girl. The prices were bad, and the union rate was larger, and I showed them right away that they would increase their pay to $3 if they would join the union, because the rates were higher than what we got for the dresses. Say, for instance, we got for a dress 90 cents, we could perhaps get $1.10, which, you know, immediately they would have, besides that, if you have a union shop, then you would not be able to fire you. If you make a mistake on something like that, the mistake would be fixed, but you have to fix your mistake, but you can't fire you on account of that. So you have this security. Now, that was a situation, you know, and I used to talk to them during the time when we used to have lunch. All right? A presser was not a union man. and he had a fight with the form, with a designer, and he fired him. And so I talked to the other presser, there were two pressers, and I said, now you see, he is fired. If we had a union shop, this man would not be fired. I said, if you all would stick together and we talk to the boss, unless he takes back this presser, you know, that they would go out on strike, and he didn't want to take back the presser. So we went out on strike, and we were only 2 days out, and we took back the presser, and we had a union. The girls, no. I did not have a trouble because they all liked that presser. Mm-hmm. And he was fired for a very simple, small reason. I don't remember what, but the other presser was talked very bad. And he also talked to the girls and he said, they want to get our presser back. And the boss didn't want to take back the presser. So little by little, you know, they were willing to stop working. So we just stopped working. We didn't go out even. We just stopped working in the shop, and we said we're not going to sew until unless he take back the presser. Took a few days, I think, it took very long, and finally he said he agreed to take back the presser, and he agreed to take back the presser. There was a chance of organizing the shop, and that's how we organized, because the pressers already were with us, and we organized, you know, signed the agreement with the union, and all the prices went up, as I said. I'm sure this was 9 cents. We got $1.10, and whatever it was today, we had some of the more expensive dresses, like buttonholes and stuff like that. That let's say it was we got $1.75 for it. We got $2.30 or $2.40. You know, you see? So everybody was satisfied, and we I hope that's up to us.
This is when you were still on Pittsburgh.
This was.
Well, how about when you started fighting for
weak
work?
That was much, much later. That was when Zygmunt came in and became president. And then they passed the General Executive Board passed weak work.
That was about 1919.
Yes, well, that was entirely a different story. That was, we had the strike in Chicago and all over. We had the strikes at that time.
Did you feel that I
was a member of the joint board at that time, and I became secretary of the strike.
So you were there. Oh.
Yeah. So I gave out the $5 strike benefit.
That strike was won very quickly, then.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you were in the joint board, when they did the sick benefit started.
Was I when the sick benefit?
No.
No.
But you were in the school when they formed the educational?
Yes.
Did you have any part in that?
Yes, I think I spoke up and I was with it, yes.
How was the response to that?
The response was good. I think the response was always good. I was a good speaker. And I was never afraid to take the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny part was that I was the only girl in the joint board.
Were you?
Yes. They used to say Rebecca and the five men, always, you know, committees, there was always men and Rebecca and five men, something like that. I was the only woman.
How did you feel about that?
I didn't feel anything.
And
there was
resistance or anything like that?
Nobody bothered. I didn't bother. It didn't make any difference. I was from Local 100 and I was elected to the joint board. And I was accepted very well. I was a very good friend with the secretary of the joint board, and so I never had any difficulty. I never had any difficulty by being a woman. Nowhere. No, that's true. I never had any difficulty. That's what I say, that some women, you know, girls, you know, then they say that they were not given an opportunity because they were a woman. I take it with a grain of salt. There must be something else most of the time, because really, if you're capable, you have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And I never had any trouble in the joint board. I never had any trouble with the man. In fact, with the Merariza, we had a strike in a Weiss company. It was a big dress shop. And it was a very, very hard strike, because they were very rich people, I understand. And most of the women there were American women who didn't go for unions. So we had a big strike, we had a committee of five men who helped us.
What year was this man?
This must have been, I don't know what year was it, 1920? 1919, maybe it was, or 1920, I don't know, something like that. And I had no, we had no trouble with them, they always were with us. And the fact of the matter is that I worked on skirts, and they had a lot of fights among the populators and pressers. There were five pressers, and they used to push in fights, you know, and they elected me a chairlady. So I was chairlady as the only skirt maker woman. There were four skirt makers. I was the only girl, and I was elected chairman of the shop to make peace between the sections. And the boss had a lot of respect for me. I, you know, he liked me because he said that I give everything I have for work. I don't skimp, and I don't lie, and I don't, you know, try to make less because it's wick work. You know, that's when wick work came in, and it was already there. And I said, so I give my share of work, and I was fast. I was a fast operator, and I gave up as many skirts as I could, as I meant could. You understand?
Yeah.
So he felt that at least I'm fighting for prices, but I'm honest in my work. I don't sabotage, you know. And I never did. I really never did. I always gave as much as I possibly had. So I would say that both in New York and in Chicago, I've never had trouble because I was a woman. I don't know how many people, some people maybe did, but there were other reasons. I've seen many reasons why some women had trouble with men, because they wanted to take advantage. And you know how women, girls do take advantage, just because they're a woman. It's silly too. But I wasn't silly. I was a very serious person. And I think I was more serious then than I am now. And I was very devoted to it, you know. So to me, you know, for instance, when we had the question of prices, which was the most important thing, you know, I mean, settling prices every season, I'd say once one of the big manufacturers, you know, said that, well, he didn't make as much money last year as he made the year before, and he lost money. I said, what do you mean you lost money? Because you didn't make as much as you made before. A year before you lost, you considered losing money. So you made $40,000, and this year you made $38,000, so you lost $2,000. That's how you figure. I said, this is nonsense. I said, you just made that much, and that is what it is. But I really had never had any trouble. But I know that a lot of women, girls, have trouble because there are, of course, different other, maybe other reasons, you see. But if those who were serious like that, I don't think had trouble. For instance, in New York, you know, I knew a number of people, they didn't have trouble. Now, as far as getting officialdom is concerned, perhaps there was a difference between women and men. I know that, say, a vice president, a man ran and a woman ran. Mary Gough, for instance, ran against a man. A man was elected. Now, if Mary Gough had been a man, I think she would be elected because people liked her and she really did an awful lot of work and all that. But because Shaw was a man, Shaw was elected, and some people wouldn't vote for a woman, so they didn't vote for Mary Gough. I know Ross Pizarro was a vice president for some time and very much respected, and yet, you know, when she came to the General Executive Board and really told them off, you know, she was through with her vice presidency. And we sat until 3 o'clock, my husband and I, begging her when she was going to New York, not to, you know, make a fool of herself, not to, you know, the old men that are already set in their saddle, and if, you know, to be careful with it. But she couldn't be careful. She was a person that said whatever was on her mouth, on her tongue was on her mouth, you know. She spoke up, and she spoke up, in my opinion, diplomatically than she should. And so she was not elected anymore vice president. And another man who took her place wasn't worth half of her ability. So in this respect, I think that women, you know, have to prove more than men. Another thing is, most women who get ahead are really more fitted than the men who are in that place, both educationally and even in experience. You know, women, a lot of men that get the high places have very little education in the unions, both in our union as well as in the clockmakers union or as well as in the teamsters union. Doesn't make any difference where. If they have a good clique around them, they'll get elected. The same thing is true in 1974. But a woman, they expect much more. And now, of course, again, you're coming to a change. You're coming to a very big change right now. Your generation is coming to a big change
with
women, because in general, because we are going to a new period of people who really haven't got so much, but are able to create a group around them who would push them. One example is the Times, for instance, when Zygmunt Erowitz was defeated by a black young woman as a delegate to the National Convention. You saw this morning, you read about it, which is ridiculous, because he certainly knows more of what to say. He is a lifelong member, since I remember him as a boy, you know, and he was in the Democratic Party, but all that. But there is a group, like you had the Democratic Convention. There wouldn't be so many people sitting with bare feet and on the floor and smoking marijuana. I don't think it would comfortably think it. He's even a very difficult period. And boys, too, but with women it's worse, because the world does expect more of women than they do of men. That's really a thing. Now, I had no trouble. First of all, I had more education than most of them, and they knew it. And if it were necessary, I wrote. And if minutes had to be taken, I took them. And many other things, you know, like that, because I had more education than they did. And this is one reason. Second reason is that I spoke up, and my voice was good, and I was a good speaker.
But you know, that was your work, right?
I wasn't afraid, because I had nothing to be afraid of. I didn't care if I wouldn't be. See? And then I became chair, and I was chair leader of 100. I had power, too, because we had 5,000 members. They didn't have the whole joint board in there. You see? Expected of me more than the next fellow who sat near me.
University
of
the
Continent. Yes.
So, in a way, you didn't have any trouble being a woman, because
I had no trouble being a woman. The reason may be because, as I said, I had a background of education. And the second reason is that I wasn't afraid of the man. I spoke up. All spoke up. And I am not a womanly woman, you know what I mean? I don't cry, I don't you know what I mean? I'm not a womanly woman, I'm not a womanly woman now too. Actually, something I say it. When I'm 78 years old, I'm just 78.
That's good though.
I'm selective. I'm active in the Zionist movement. Here is really interesting article about what the labor unions are doing for Israel. If you want to, you can take it home. It's really very interesting. There was a group of people going to Israel who were not Jews, you know, from the various heads of the various unions, Teamsters Union, the Miners Union, and they all have, you know, something here. Well, I just happened to take it. I had some other shalom, but I just happened to take this yesterday, the newest. This is the newest.
I'd like to read that.
You can take it home if you want to.